We refinance out at about the 3-year mark once it's stabilized. 70% of the money goes back to the investors, and about the 5 to 6 point, then we refinance, get it in a steady loan, and then we hold for 10 years. This is a legacy.
If you have over $200,000 sitting stagnant in your bank, retirement account, or home equity, then you're literally losing money. On this show, you learn how to get that money working for you consistently and conservatively. Learn to grow your nest egg with your host, Sean Winslow. Let's dive in.
Welcome back to another Multifamily Monday episode. I'm your host, Sean Winslow, and this is the Multifamily Money Podcast. What is going on, everyone? Welcome back to another show. I got a great guest. We had a ton of fun. Talked about a lot of cool things from living abroad while investing to hotel to multifamily conversions. We get into a lot of cool things, a lot of actionable steps, something you're going to want to take notes on. But before that, as you know, the fee, there's only one fee here. I don't make any money off of this. It is, if you found any value from this show, this improved your life in any way, you got any knowledge from this, please share it with a friend, family member, colleague, whoever you think could also get value from this, please share. And if you don't mind, leave a rating or review if you haven't done so. All right. So my guest was a lot of fun. She talked about a lot of cool things. She's living in Costa Rica, investing in multifamily in the United States. And we just had a phenomenal time, and she brought a lot of actionable steps on how to do that, how to be able to leave your corporate America job, go to Costa Rica, live off passive income from your investments, and then continue to invest and run a real estate investment business from Costa Rica. So a lot of cool things. Without further ado, here is Becca Hint. Becca, welcome to the show, my friend. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day.
Oh, my pleasure, Sean. Thanks for having me.
Yes, it's so funny how this happened. So Becca and I both met at DealMaker Live in Dallas this year. It was a brief chat, but it was a wonderful chat. And I'm so glad we're having this talk. But she reached out just randomly to get out to see if we wanted to do anything together. And I remember that I know her story we're about to get into. And I was like, wait, I think we met. So it's so funny that how worlds just collide like that. And I can't wait for you to get into this because she has a unique story. Not only is she a mother, a wife, a business operator, an investor, but she does it from a unique place. So without further ado, I'll just let you get into it.
All right. Well, thanks for that intro. Yes, a unique place. Usually I'd have the beach in the background and my surfboard with me. But it's so nice to catch up again, Sean. It was really great to meet you at DealMaker Live too. I love when the universe comes together like this.
Yes.
But yeah, quick, once over, I'm in Nosara, Costa Rica. Is my family and I moved here about a year ago, and we're medical device reps in the San Francisco Bay Area that during the pandemic, we just decided to leave it all behind. We're part of that great resignation, as they call it, the white collar workers that tell their employers, adios, and we headed for the tropics. So much of this journey has been in my conversation with others and how to do this, you can do this, and ways we did it, and really put our income on cruise control and headed out to a place where things weren't locked down as they were in the Bay Area here, and to live a richer life than what we had left behind.
It's so cool, but I want to like dig into, I feel like a lot of people would want to do this, but I feel like there's some mindset hurdle that people have to get over. So what was that? And was there a moment that you can remember that you actually got over that? Or how did that come to be?
It is. You're so right on that. Everybody talks about this kind of stuff. They talk about leaving it all behind and moving to the tropics, kicking back on the beach and having mailbox money to support the whole thing. But then there's people think of reasons that they can't. And there's a lot of reasons that you can't, but there's a lot of ways to do this. It's just a matter of education in how to restructure your life. But yeah, the first point came is, well, my kids were on Zoom school, which was less than satisfactory. And my husband, I said one day, hey, do you know what? I was just on Airbnb and I was calculating how much we could get for this place. We're over the bridge in North Bay in San Francisco Bay Area, just over the Golden Gate Bridge. I said, do you know how much we could get per day if we rented this place? And do you know how much we could live elsewhere, like in Costa Rica, Ecuador, Mexico, many of these other places per day? And we could actually live off that delta from what we get on the rent per day versus what we would pay overseas. And then the light bulb went off. So the quest began. It took us probably about 6 months to kind of restructure everything. So much of that is really getting rid of things. So we got rid of a lot of things on Craigslist and Nextdoor and all of these apps. But the finances was the big one. How to do that? How to put things on autopilot, get enough passive income. And for many, it's how can you lessen your workload at your current job and move overseas? That's always the best thing to do, by the way, is if you can take a US job overseas, you certainly don't want to go into these markets seeking jobs there. But if you can even lessen your hours to maybe part-time in US wage, that would often support you overseas. So you're able to pursue all the things in that location, like surfing several times a week, like we do, and yoga. We live in Nosara, Costa Rica, which is a boutique surf and yoga hub of the world. And it's one of the blue zones of the world. And these are places where people live. Are you familiar with blue zone, Sean?
No, get into that.
Oh yeah, these are great. So you got to Google these. There's plenty of books on this, movies. Blue zones. There's about six of them in the world, I believe. And these are places where people live a very long, healthy life. There's the highest concentration of centenarians, people that live to 100 years old beyond in very good health. And it comes down to the food, the relaxed lifestyle, a little bit of sun, and several other factors. And where we are in Costa Rica is one of them. Our province, in particular, Guanacaste province, and Nosara being the town, Guanacaste being the province. Okinawa, Japan is another one. Sardinia's another one. So you'll find it on Google. But
that's so cool.
It makes a difference. I can tell you that. I mean, we look about 10 years younger. My husband he came here with all these allergies and all kinds of nonsense stuff that we really couldn't figure out. Bunch of medication. In 2 weeks, he was off of that. The guy's lost 10 pounds. Look, actually, he's lost 20 pounds. He looks about 10 years younger and is off all this kind of nonsense medications. So much of this is just stress. A lot of these ailments are just really stress induced. So that all dissipated is a huge life upgrade in the sense of health there. But of course, it comes down to the big question of how the heck are you going to support yourself if you leave it all behind?
Right. Like, yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, it might be relaxed there, but if you can't support yourself, are you actually going to be relaxed? So that's a great question.
Being dead broke is not being relaxed.
Yeah. No.
Well, that's where you got to just start looking at your life and your finances. And then what we did is, first of all, look at the stock market. Is the stock market loving you back as you love the stock market? In our case, it was definitely no.
Yeah.
And then most people that do this and other expat friends we have in Costa Rica, they really just stitch a lot of things together. And in the case of us, a big part of it was our primary residence here. Quite frankly. And that is turning your liability, your primary residence, that's a liability while you live there, into an asset. And so in doing that, by renting it out, it becomes an asset. And then many things become tax deductible, like the renovations of that house to prepare it for rental up to a year before can be tax deductible. So you need a new bathroom, floors, kitchen, I mean, you name it, it becomes tax deductible. Coming back to visit your friends, family, and your asset is then tax deductible to a certain percentage of the days that you go visit that, because now you're visiting an investment. So it's queuing things up in that sense to be tax deductible and also generate an income. Another factor in this was I have a building that my very first investment 18 years ago in San Francisco, I house hacked. So I lived in one unit, renovated the other unit, and then flip-flopped. It's a 125-year-old Victorian duplex.
Cool.
Yeah, those are such fun projects. Lifted up the building and put parking down below to charge another $500 in rent, and condo converted it, which is what you do in San Francisco. And so that kicks off some income there. Also, passive investment is a key part of this. We have hundreds of units that I'm a limited partner in, as a limited partner in passive income investments, multifamily syndications, most of them in Texas. So that kicks off some income. So really, we just kind of stitched everything together here in order to make this play. And we're here at the beach, 80% supported by passive income from real estate investing.
That's amazing. And so is the other 20%, you still have your W-2 to some capacity?
The other 20%, we're still figuring out, my friend.
I got you. That's fun too, though, right?
That's great, right? I mean, you don't want to talk to people that have it all figured out, or you don't need to have everything queued up just perfectly before you go, because you'll never do it then.
True.
Can't wait for the whole road to be paved.
That'll never be perfect. Fun is that comes from the journey, not from reaching it. So if you'd already reached it, you know, where's the fun in that?
That is right. And you know, that's the traveler saying we have in our family too, because almost every family trip never goes right. And I tell my kids, you know, the fun really is in the journey to get to the destination. It's often not even the destination. It's all the comedy that takes place in trying to get there.
It's so true. When I was growing up, my mom had put a painting in my bathroom that had that saying. When I was younger, I would read it every day because it was like staring, and when I was brushing my teeth, it was like staring right at me every day. And for a while, I was like, oh, that's a really cool saying. And it wasn't until I was older that I actually got it. But now that sticks with, there's always times you're going to have the good and the bad, right? There's times, especially life of an entrepreneur, ups and downs. And you just always got to remember that this is the fun part. These are the stories that are being created that one day you're going to look back on and say, remember those good times. So don't rush the destination away. That's what I've learned. So
I love it. I love it. I couldn't agree more.
So how has this journey been then? You said you're about a year in. What is it like? And what do you see for the next coming year?
Well, it's been an amazing journey. Certainly, there's the expat challenges. So there's the typical expat journey of the first 3 months. You're just trying to get your groove on and figuring out where everything is and how things work in the new country. And then actually often at about the 3 month mark, a lot of expats go, why the heck did I do this again? It was just so much easier to sit back in the same home I've lived in all my life, and or for many years at least. But after that 3 month mark, then the enlightenment kind of kicks in, the joy of it. So it really becomes a lot of fun at probably the 4 to 6 month mark. And then you realize this is amazing, tremendous life upgrade. And it is for us. Our day starts as I wake up and then get the kids to school. The kids go to an international baccalaureate school in between the jungle and the sea, bilingual school, which Spanish was a big part of this. In raising bilingual kids is my goal, even though we weren't bilingual ourselves. And then we take a leisurely walk on the beach. We walk over to often do some yoga and then do some surf in the morning. It's either surf or yoga. Sometimes for my husband, it's both. Then we come back and about probably around 10 o'clock or so, we start work in the multifamily business.
Awesome. Well, tell me about the multifamily business. I know you said you're both limited and active, so I'd love to hear about it.
Yeah, I'm both limited and active. I'm probably about 60 or 70% limited, an LP, limited partner. And then the other part is active. My model is a co-GP model. And I love this because this allows me to pick the best operators in the best market. So what this means for your listeners, instead of Becca out there in Texas trying to get all the broker relations, compete with the big guys and take down a property on my own and bring my investors in, instead, I look for the emerging markets and the best operators in those markets. So what that is markets with population growth, job growth, there's a positive migration. And then I partner with people in those markets that have the relationships, and then I pick the best deal of those operators in the market. Because plenty of operators will have, say, 5 deals, and you ask them which one is their best, and they will tell you. There's certainly your favorite child, right?
Always.
Always, right? So that's the one I want. I want the best deal from the most experienced operators. And then I bring my own money along with my investor money. After I heavily vet these deals, we do 3 rounds of underwriting, check the market ourselves, go visit the property. And so I invest right alongside with my investors.
Which is great. That's important. I know investors like to see that their sponsor has skin in the game, right? And it also shows that you believe in the deal. And to your point of not going out there and fighting to get the broker relations, I can tell you that's smart because it's a lot of work. But no, I love that model. And we were talking about this earlier that multifamily is a team sport. And that's what's really cool about this business is that people want to help one another. They want a partner. And that's how these deals are done. So that's why I love it.
Yeah, me too. And you have to embrace that. And I've done it the other way. I've been the lone wolf out there in Kansas City. I bought a 12 unit with my IRA and I'm like, okay, I've got this. But you know, that's a kind of a lonely game. And there's a benefit to the collective mindset. And as you scale up, 50 units and up is where the economies of scale really are. And some would even argue it's 75 units and up, but it becomes a team sport. That's even better because you need help from everybody. And like we were saying at the beginning of this call, this is the beauty of this space. Everybody's so helpful And you need people to help bring the money. You need people on the ground to find the deals. You need others to operate, a good asset manager. You need keen people to look at the financials, which I do the first round of underwriting. Then my partner, she's a CPA, does the next round. And then we have a third round just to make sure we don't miss anything. So it's when you embrace this on a higher level, in the multifamily game, you can get the finest of talent to really fine tune your operations. And that's what I love about this business as well.
I love it. It's all about leverage. You know, not only use leverage to buy properties, but we can leverage other people's skills to assemble like the best team to then provide a stellar opportunity for investors.
That's right.
Which, as we were saying, other investments, you know, it's more of like a lone wolf thing where people don't want to share, don't want to do that. And no one's good at everything, right? So it's good to assemble the best of the best in every aspect.
That's exactly how I look at it. No one's good at everything. So you're better off picking your best team. And in this business, even if you start with money, you run out of money pretty quickly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't care who you are.
I don't care who you are. You're going to need to
Yeah, even if you have a lot, that means you're going to go after bigger deals, but you're only going to be able to take so much of them down. So you run out fast. So I'm sure listeners are wondering, all right, Becca, so you're partnering with these rock stars. How are you finding partners? How do you go about doing that?
Well, I go to several meetings, so like where you and I met, yep. Sean. And as I said, I'm a limited partner, really on the 60 to 70% side of this anyways.
Right.
So I'm in touch with the operators looking at these deals for myself and then bringing people right along with me. And I'm vetting these sponsors as well to think, do I want to bring my money and investor money in? And so it's several things, meetups, LinkedIn, Zoom, kind of Zoom get-togethers, things like that. And one of our latest deals, which has been just a home run for us, is hotel conversion. So that's another space I really love. In addition to multifamily, things are being a little bit squeezed in multifamily. As you know, cap rates are compressed and deals are harder to find. At the beginning of the pandemic, we started looking where others aren't looking, right? It's what you want to do. They zig, you zag.
Yep.
And we discovered the hotel apocalypse and came across a great hotel deal that's really fun to talk about as well.
Yeah, let's do that. It's amazing because if you think about it, even from a macro perspective, we have a huge housing issue. We don't have enough housing for people. And then on top of that, between permitting and zoning, that's a whole pain that can take 1 to 2 years just in itself before you even break ground. And then once you do break ground, we've seen where labor and material costs have gone right through the roof. So I think it's a really cool way to add actual units. You're taking a hotel that was probably older, probably not really filled to capacity because most people are going to newer spots. So it's really underutilized anyways, and you're converting it to housing. It's funny because you mentioned the brand of the hotel, one of the ones you converted. Before we were recording, you mentioned this and it dinged for me because I was looking at one to do the same thing, but I've never done that. So I'm excited about this conversation selfishly. So yeah, jump in.
Yes. Well, I could provide you some pointers and this is a really fun space. So I would say if you're interested, let's talk offline, but there's a lot of money to be made too in this.
Yeah.
That it has a lot more meat on the bone, let's just say that, than multifamily, which is wonderful.
Quick question. What's generally the people that do the conversions? Is it a convert, refinance money out and hold, or is it a convert and then sell? I'm sure there's both, but what do most people do that you've seen?
You're right. There's both. In our plan, it's convert, refinance, then refinance again at about year 6.
Okay.
Because they're on bridge loans, right? So you want to get out of the bridge loan as soon as possible. But they're vacant. So Fannie and Freddie won't look at these deals. And you have to find specific bridge lenders that will. So yeah, we refinance out at about the 3-year mark once it's stabilized. 70% of the money goes back to the investors. And about the 5 to 6 point, then we refinance, get it in a steady loan. And then we hold for 10 years. This is a legacy play. And I love this. And you can do these with hotels more so than multifamily because you have so much equity. There's so much meat on the bone. But in our deal in particular, all the money's returned at the 5 or 6 month mark. Then we're in it for 10 years, infinite returns because all the money has been returned and it's just mailbox money from there and the tax deductions.
Oh, that's awesome. Buying at such a low basis, right? Because You're not buying at like where the current multifamily base price per door is because you got to convert that. So there's so much equity and you're just forcing the appreciation that you can, even in a hot market, you still can, as they call it, the burr strategy, you still can refinance out, which is really cool.
Exactly.
How long does it usually, I know it probably just, it depends on the scope of the and the size of the property, but for you, how long is it taking to fully convert?
Yes. So that's a biggie there, right? Yeah. These are deep value adds, heavy lifts. So buckle up. It's a while. It's at least 18 months. And that's about the point that we're at here. And maybe even up to about 20 months, I'd say, depending on the size of it. In our case, what we have here is a 100-unit Quality Inn motel that we're taking down to 65 units of multifamily. So 31 one-bedrooms, 31 studios, and 2 bedrooms. 3 or 4. I'm going to do the math on that. Still a little early.
I know. It's
sand funny. Behind my ears.
Fly. Oh, there you go. Jealous.
I know. I threw that in to make you jealous. But yeah, initially we went into this thinking, yay, we've got 100 studios, home run. And we bought this deal for 30 cents on the dollar, which is 70% discount during the hotel apocalypse, where these hotels were just really, they were struggling before the pandemic. Right. But come the pandemic, I mean, they were really falling apart. So that provided the opportunity to get it at a really good deal. But the downside is that, as you pointed out, it's a long play. And since they are deep value adds, your investors just need to know that it's about 2 years probably with no cash flows. But on the other side of that, there's a lot of money to be made on the equity side.
With your money out of it too, so there's less risk.
That's right. And you can get these at such a good price, as I mentioned, that a lot of multifamily deals, it's hard to do a burst strategy, essentially, to refinance out, give your investors their money back, and then stay in the deal for the longer term. You often just need to sell to give everybody their money back because you don't have enough money in the deal to hold it for 10 years on a legacy play.
Yeah, there's not enough equity to cash them out. Yeah.
Yeah.
I had a question that just came to mind. So if you acquire this, say it's a Quality Inn like yours, are there any contracts that Quality Inn had with the previous owner that could potentially, because I know in other industries this would happen where it would then transfer over to you, say they had like 2 years left. Is there anything like that? Or is it simply you acquire the property and then you can do whatever you want with it?
Great question.
And Quality Inn has no say anymore.
Quality Inn does have a say. So very insightful for you. You're scratching the surface of hotel conversions. You're on your way already. There's three big things to consider before even buying it. And that is, first of all, the franchise. Like you said, you have to buy out of the franchise. And that cost can range from $35,000 to up to $200,000, depending on what kind of franchise you're looking at. Quality Inn, ours was, I think we were in the $35,000 range or so. And that is something to consider. Many people just put that back on the owner, or you could put that in the price of the property. But it's best to push it back on the current owner and have themselves get out of that franchise.
Okay. And that could just be like as in, all right, like a date, once you close, then they pay it off, or you have them pay it off ahead of time before you even close.
You could do it one of both ways. We have another investor friend that he negotiates directly with the franchise. We prefer to push that back on the owner, and then we just included it in the purchase price.
Oh, cool.
But that must be taken care of because you don't want to be in the hotel business.
No, yeah, that's not why we're buying. Not our expertise.
And they're trying to get out of it for a reason.
Oh, exactly.
And then the second of the three things is zoning, that you will need to have this rezoned. For us, we lucked out. It's a tertiary market in Arizona. It was in multifamily and hotels are zoned equally. So for us, it was just a change of use permit. Sure. But in Phoenix, we have another friend that cost him $500,000, $500,000 to rezone it, because with rezoning, it often comes with strings attached. The city said, okay, we'll give you your rezoning permit, but you need to put in a new road and 2 fire hydrants at a cost of $500,000. So it's permission with strings attached.
Of course.
Many people hire zoning consultants to do that. It gets quite complex. On tertiary markets, it's a bit easier, but the larger the city, the more complex it gets. And I would say the third with hotels is fire. If there was any one theme with hotel conversions, I would say it comes down to the city trying to mitigate the fire risk. Strangely enough, many hotels don't even have fire sprinklers. Ours didn't. When you buy hotels, often the theme that's in place is security. So they have thick doors, deadbolts. If you have windows on the second floor, they don't open for suicide risk. It's safety there. But when you convert it to multifamily, now you need to start thinking fire risk. So you'll need to put in fire sprinklers all throughout the building, which requires a dedicated line. In our case, it was putting in one fire hydrant. Also, the sheetrock in hotels is not as thick as the sheetrock in multifamily. It's probably why they're always so noisy.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So often you have to go through and re-sheetrock the whole building with a thicker fire safety sheetrock. And kind of makes sense because there's no kitchens typically in hotels.
Yeah.
So fire isn't so much of a risk. But the real play is to get the suites. If you can get one of the suites with kitchens already in place, often all those fire mitigation things are already in place.
That's interesting. That's a good tip. And so you're going from over 100 units down to about 60. So that I'm sure that's from reconfiguring and adding kitchens and all that.
Right. 100 units to 65. We reconfigure all the spaces. And it's really fun. If you're an architect, these are really fun deals because you get to switch around the spaces, removing doors. We have a whole closet full of random front doors we're trying to figure out what to do with. You have all the furnishings. So it's a thought of how do you want to run this? Do you want to run it as an Airbnb, perhaps?
Yep.
And keep some of those furnishings and just upgrade them. That's another thing to consider. And there's so many uses for hotels, which is why this space is really so fun. There's a company in Austin, New, it's called. I think it's NU. And they keep all of these hotels as studios and they market it to millennials and have the downstairs space, a co-working space, a lobby. San Francisco repurposes hotels as homeless shelters.
Mm-hmm.
And then Florida, for all the baby boomers, they do them as assisted living spaces.
Oh, cool.
And that gets a little tricky on the fire side for its assisted living. I've heard that you have to have a higher velocity fire sprinklers in assisted living places because it takes longer to get the people out of the building.
Right.
So that's something to underwrite to and really look at what your market will, what your use is going to be and what your market, the city wants you to do with that use.
And are you using a construction management team to help in the underwriting, what you should be bringing for CapEx?
Yes. So know that as this conversation started, it's a deep value add. We have actually for us, it was our property manager has a construction arm. And we lucked out in the sense that 5 minutes away from this property, we have another investor friend that did the exact same thing to a hotel.
Oh, cool.
I know. It just, the stars aligned on this. And the property management company with their construction arm did that same hotel. So we said, brilliant, just cut and paste what you did 5 minutes away.
Yeah, that's important to not only have a construction management team, but have one that has done this before because it's a lot different than another type of project.
It's smart, yeah. And then we brought in our own efficiencies as well, that we did our own electrical. We had our own electrical contractors, pool, and a couple other things, like some of the asphalt guys. I partnered with a operator there on the ground in a boots on the ground in Arizona. And these guys bring up condemned buildings up to livable standard. They like to really get their hands dirty. And that's the perfect type of partner for a deal like this.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. You don't mind saying how much is the CapEx for this project?
Oh, yeah, you bet. We bought this at about 1.7. And coincidentally, the CapEx is just about the same.
Yeah.
It's about 1.6 and some change.
That sounds about right. But then it's going to be worth a lot more than that. So that's phenomenal.
Absolutely. It's worth much more than that. We were looking at about 5.8 to 6.2.
Yeah, that's crazy.
There's so much meat on the bone. And you know what's also great about this, Sean, is that you're providing affordable housing for people. Rather than, as we know, when builders build and they bring in new inventory, the cost of materials and supplies, they're building A-class properties for the most part.
Yeah.
And then when you're repositioning multifamily, you're cleaning up properties and providing clean, safe, affordable housing for people, but it's not new inventory. With hotels, you can actually bring affordable inventory to the market that didn't typically exist. In this case, we're bringing 65 units that weren't there before. And you can target that the market where is the true housing crisis, right? You hear this housing crisis, but it's not for your A-class properties. It's for people that are the lower middle class and the upper lower class that are the working poor, that don't qualify for all these concessions from the government. And in the Arizona market, this tertiary market in Arizona, that sweet spot is between the $700 to $1,000 range in rents.
That's awesome. That's just really cool about real estate investing too, is it's not only can we make great returns for our investors and change their lives, but then you can change the lives of those that live in the community that will be your residents. And I always stress that that's personally one of the greatest feelings I have when I walk onto one of our properties that we're doing a decent sized value add, is that they thank you for the changes you're making on the property. It's such a good feeling because you're like providing them with housing that they are like proud to call home.
That's right. There's no better feeling when you walk into the property and a resident comes up to you and says, I love what you guys are doing here. Thank you.
And I bet that's like 10x, something like that, because you're actually providing them housing, right? That wasn't there before.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. When you get into hotels, you'll find there's a small group that actually likes to live in hotels. They like their laundry done and I guess their rooms cleaned. So
makes sense. It's pretty easier life.
Actually.
Yeah.
I have to think about that.
I feel like you finish laundry and then you're like, well, I got to start the next one. So I already caught up.
That's my life too.
Yeah. I bet, especially with kids.
Oh, absolutely. With two kids. But yeah, even those people are coming up saying, hey, wow, thanks for the kitchen. I'm loving this place. And in that market, we have military base and there's a lot of traveling nurses with a new hospital. And so even people like that are living in hotels when they can't find short-term Airbnb type housing. So they're very appreciative of the kitchens and the upgraded spaces.
Yeah, the one I was telling you about that I'm looking at, it's right next to a large medical center, the largest in the state, and a large university. So it could pull in, you could have like part long-term, part mid-term in there because there's tons of traveling nurses, you know, traveling professors, all that stuff.
Yes. Love it. Oh gosh. We got to talk about this deal offline, but I'm loving the sound of this.
Yeah. We'll talk offline for sure.
And you know, while you thinking of that in particular with so many traveling nurses and everything around there, you can still run it as a hotel. So our case, we're doing two phases. So we have phase one, phase two, and until you get actually that occupancy permit to allow for multifamily housing, you still have your hotel permit. So you can run those as an Airbnb if you get that first phase fixed up.
Oh, cool. Well, that's really cool. So then you'll have keep on or hire some staff to do that, the turns of the rooms, if you wanted to run it like that.
That's right. Housing that's under 30 days.
Okay. Yeah, just like a typical short-term rental, but you have on-site staff, which, or at least staff that's dedicated to your property, which is really cool.
That's right. Yeah, we kept on some of the staff there because they know the property well.
That's awesome. So in the future, do you see yourself doing more of these? And will it specifically be multifamily, or will you venture into those, any other like assisted living?
I love the hotel space and I love the multifamily space.
Yeah.
I'm kind of looking at assisted living a bit, but I tend to stay in my lane and
smart.
I love the multifamily.
Do you think multifamily operations are intense? Wait till you get to that level. Not that I've done it, but I've seen it and it's very operations intensive for assisted living. Which is totally understandable.
Understandable. And that's what I thought as well. And that's why I haven't ventured into it too much.
Yeah. Oh, this is a great conversation. I could just hijack this and be selfish and ask you more questions, but...
Please do. I'm an open book. I'd love to help. Things, so on the subject, I don't know, I just love hotels. They're so fun. But things to consider in the renovation.
Yeah.
Just three things. We'll keep it short. You do want to think about if you have a second story hotel... As I mentioned earlier, those windows, they won't open. So with multifamily, you need to have egress because of fire. So strangely enough, we found ourselves reframing these floor-to-ceiling windows, which were beautiful, and we had to reframe them into smaller windows with egress. So strange kind of quirky things that you don't think of. Also doors, as I mentioned, you have all these doors. So think about what you're going to do with the merry-go-round of doors. And also the layout of hotels, how to optimize those water hookups. In our case, and most hotel conversions do this, is we put the kitchen hookups directly on the other side of the bathroom so we could use those plumbing hookups. And we did these efficiency kitchens in which it's a microwave oven convection small thing that is perfect for that space. We have some beautiful pictures on this. We're very pleased with how things turned out, but just kind of little quirky things to think about and ways to save money with the utilities that are already in place.
Yeah, that's important on a conversion, because it's one thing to run new utilities, which is expensive, but it's a whole nother thing when you've got to work with existing and then change it. That's super expensive.
Super expensive. So try to work with what you have.
Yeah.
And then also, even before you even go into this, get your property manager to look at it and say, what kind of inventory can this market support? In our case, it couldn't support 100 studios in a tertiary market as much as we would like it to. They said, nuh-uh, back the truck up. No,
back the truck up. Back it up.
Back it up. Not so fast.
That's good to know. And I've talked about this before too, is you should be using those resources you have to check that what you're underwriting can be supported. And the best, one of the best people to know is the property on that specific thing is the property management company, because they know what's renting and what's not and what people are looking for in a given market. So glad you brought that up.
Yeah. Key members of the team, as we said before.
Yep. And use them. That's why they're there.
Because you're paying them.
Yeah, exactly. Did you say you added a pool, or was there already a pool there?
There was already a pool that needed some finishing touches, redecking, coping, the whole bit. Yeah.
That's another great touch, another amenity that people look for. And
Yeah. I mean, that's the beauty of hotels. They're really set up pretty much for multifamily. If you just plug in the kitchens, you have your leasing office with the lobby, you have your pool, you have a lot of open space. So there's a lot of things already in place.
That's awesome. All right. I don't want to take too much of your time, Becca. This has been awesome. I know I'm going to be reaching out to you offline, but before I let you go, before I ask my last two questions, where can people find you?
Oh, you bet. Okay. Well, let's see. You know, I have a free guide for your listeners, which is a good way to find me as well. It's called 6 Steps to Put Your Income on Autopilot and Move Overseas. And this will provide you links of cost of living indexes for other places around the world that you may want to go to, a link of the best places for expats to live in 2022. Also, some of the least expensive places for expats to live. It also gives a 6-step guide in how we did this, how we kind of left it all behind and moved overseas, and what we stitched together and how to do that. You can find that at hintinvestments.com. So it's www.hintinvestments.com. You could also reach out to me at Becca, B-E-C-C-A, at hintinvestments.com, or find me on LinkedIn, Becca Hint, or Hintergart, my very long married last name no one can spell. Just go for Becca Hint. You'll be able to find me there. But I love to help other people in this journey, answer any questions. If they are interested in investing side by side in deals I'm investing, love to have them along for the ride in this journey.
That's amazing. All right. Thank you for sharing that. And the last two questions. The first question has kind of two parts. And part B, it's kind of been this whole episode, so feel free to skip over it. But part A is, why multifamily to achieve your life goals? And then part B is, what type of life has it afforded you? Which we've kind of gone over that, but feel free to touch on that as well.
Oh, you bet. Well, first of all, what kind of life? It's been a game changer. This is nothing that my medical device job could have ever provided me. That was a job in which I had to be present to make money. So I was trading my time for money. In multifamily, it's the opposite. You're queuing up your life to have it on a passive income level in which you don't trade your time for money. So first of all, with that, and why multifamily? I love multifamily for so many reasons, but the tax benefits are a huge one for us. I'm sure your listeners probably know this, but the government, just like any compensation job, any sales job, the government provides a compensation plan for things they don't do well. And things like that are farming, gas and oil, and housing. And of that, we choose the housing asset. And once you are following the compensation program of the government, the doors open to a host of tax benefits. Their compensation is tax benefits. So it becomes an equation of how much can you save and not pay in taxes. rather than my other equation in medical device sales, which was how much can I earn? And then I just keep getting taxed. So the more you work, the more money you make, the more taxes you pay. But with multifamily, the more assets you own, the less taxes you pay. So that, I love the tax benefits, the passive income that it provides, and of course, the lifestyle freedom, and that there's an end in mind, right? With W-2 jobs, you just have to keep working, and there's just, it seems to be never ending.
I love it. It's so true. I tell this story a lot, though. When I left my corporate job in the financial services industry, when I was making the decision of what I wanted to do, instead of being like, all right, I knew I liked real estate and a couple of different industries, tech and all that. But instead of being what industry do I want to go into? Like, what job do I want? It was like, no, first, what life do I want? And then what career or whatever can support that? And so the life I wanted was, one, I wanted to make a certain amount of money to not only care for myself, future family, and also help others. I also wanted to have a flexible calendar to be able to do what I want when I wanted with whoever I wanted. And so then I was like, well, let's think about other people that seem to be, they're successful, they can afford to do things. And whenever you ask them to do something, they can always do it. Who are these people? And every one of them was a real estate investor. I was like, ding, 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 ding. So I'm with you on that. We only live this life once, right? And we got to be doing the things that we passionate about, love to do.
It's so true.
Time is our most scarce resource. So we got to make the best of it.
Yeah, it's so true. And if anything that has underscored that has been the pandemic, that life's short, shorter than you think. That's quite brilliant of you and insightful to think of what lifestyle you want rather than what career do you want. I don't think many of us think of it that way. We just kind of get out of college and try to scramble to get the next job to keep the lights on.
Yeah. And Becca, I'm not saying I was like enlightened or some genius over here. It just one day came to me and I was like, you know, I want to stop working for someone else's dream. And how do I create this? So
I think it's a stroke of brilliance, actually. A lot of people don't even reach that.
Well, I'm glad I did. And you clearly have too. So that's amazing.
Thank you.
Last question, the good old time machine question. If you had a time machine, you could go back in time and tell your younger self. And this show is not only about multifamily, but personal finance, because that's my background. So if you could tell yourself one piece of financial advice, what would that be?
That would have been to leave the corporate world earlier than I did and to begin investing in multifamily and cue my life up in a passive income way earlier on.
Love it. Love it. Same here. So... Well, Becca, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. This has been awesome. And I definitely want to stay connected. So,
well, me too, Sean. Thank you so much for your time. This has been a lot of fun. And I can't wait to talk hotel conversions with you.
Yes, that'll be soon.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
All right. And listeners, as you know, easy doesn't pay well and instant gratification is self-destructive. So always remember, it's not just working hard for your money, but having your money work hard for you. So you can create the life of your dreams and just make everyone around you, if that's what it's about. All right, take care.
Hey, this is Sean Winslow. After being in the financial service industry for years and having candid conversations with good people just like you, I realized that so many of us are wanting an investment strategy that provides solid returns and consistent income without the bumps in the road. There's little known secret that your financial advisor doesn't want you to know. There is investment out there that is less volatile and the returns are stronger. Get more details by going to greenbriercg.com and clicking on the free e-report. And by the way, if this show has provided you any value, then feel free to leave an honest written review and, of course, share it with a friend who needs it. See you next week for another great show.